Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. As we continue on with our season-by-season examination of Netflix's hit series Drive to Survive, we are taking a look at Season 4, which covers the 2021 Formula One racing season. This truly was a season like no other. Mercedes had won 7 Constructor Championships in a row, as well as Lewis Hamilton winning 7 World Drivers Championships. Teams were tired of being beaten and were looking to Red Bull and Max Verstappen, who were raising the bar towards the end of 2020. Everyone was hoping their momentum would carry into this season and take out the reigning champs. Beyond the title fight, we'll discuss the midfield battle, rookie performances, and Netflix's portrayal versus reality.
There was a lot of buzz in the paddock going into the 2021 season and also outside the paddock because Drive to Survive actually started the first episode with Twitter posts that claimed that Netflix would need 20 episodes to show all the drama from the 2021 season. In 2021, there were 3 new drivers, 4 former champions, 2 new rebranded teams, Alpine, which was formerly Renault, and Aston Martin, formerly Racing Point, that took over for Force India. Fernando Alonso came out of retirement, and Stefano Domenicali, former Ferrari team principal, was now running Formula One. We also follow Formula One's Goldilocks, Daniel Ricciardo. After not seeing the right fit with Red Bull in Season 1 and failing to be comfortable with Renault in Seasons 2 and 3, will Daniel Ricciardo's move to McLaren be just right? We also check in with Carlos Sainz in his debut at Ferrari and Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull seat.
I have a bit of a clarification I want to make as we get into the main discussion about Drive to Survive and my F1 fandom. My interest in the sport was sparked by the episode Man on Fire, which was the first I had ever watched. However, once I saw that episode, I switched to watching the races live, which happened to be in 2021. And it was either the Portugal or Spanish Grand Prix, which was my first race that I watched. So I've never actually watched Drive to Survive all the way through. This was the first time watching these episodes as I prepared for our podcast. So it was interesting watching how everything that happened was presented and comparing it to my memories. So with that, let's dive into the spoilers.
This season produced great feel-good wins for 2 drivers that went through the ringer in the past 3 seasons. We already spoken about Daniel Ricciardo's musical chairs of going from Red Bull to Renault to McLaren, trying to go back to his winning ways. And it finally happened to him, for him at Monza. Christian Horner, who has a soft spot for Daniel, mentioned how everyone in the paddock was pleased to see him win. And Daniel's post-victory radio message said it all. And for anyone who thought I left, I never left. Esteban Ocon also kept being knocked down after losing his mentor in Force India when its owner had to sell the company because he was embroiled in fraud, losing his seat in Racing Point after Papa Stroll needed a seat for his son, and now losing Cyril, former team principal of Renault, who was instrumental in getting Ocon back into Formula One. So all of this culminated in the most insane race at Hungary. I don't know, Aaron, if you saw that one live, but it was phenomenal based on how Drive to Survive presented it. The iconic moment of Lewis Hamilton being the only car on the restart because everyone else was pitting for new tires. Nobody has ever seen anything before or since. So that was very special. But I think the most special moment was, of course, Ocon holding on to finish first against all odds. And that was really highlight for Esti Besti.
I did watch that one live. I was stunned because, you remember, I'm still learning F1. I do not understand the rules. But when I saw Lewis Hamilton, the only one out there, I looked at my husband. I'm like, this can't be right. I'm not fully understanding pit strategies, but this makes no sense to me. And when Ocon won, just based on the few races that I had seen, his name was not always at the top. So it was pretty unique to see such an underdog come through and get his first Grand Prix victory. So it was pretty neat to actually get to watch that one live.
It was one of only a few heart heartwarming moments in this season. The opposite of heartwarming moment was what was happening with Haas. So Haas really struggled at the end of 2020 with financial challenges brought on by COVID-19 pandemic. Russian fertilizer company Uralkali became the title sponsor of the team, and we welcomed another father-son duo that nobody wanted or asked for. Nikita Mazepin and his father, Dmitry, who are a huge step down from Papa Stroll and Lance Stroll. Nikita drove alongside fellow rookie and another nepotism hire, Mick Schumacher, the son of 7 world champion Michael Schumacher, and his performance was a complete disaster. Up to that point, before he got into Formula One, his biggest achievement was almost being third in Formula 3. And I just love how Drive to Survive stresses that moment that this means there could be greatness in his future. Unfortunately, it did not pan out. He quickly gained a reputation for bad driving and even gained an unfortunate moniker, Meza Spin. And he lost to his teammate, Mick Schumacher, so decisively that at one point they were more than a second apart. Now, this is a sport where every millisecond counts, and a difference of more than 3/10 between teammates is considered disastrous. The episode featuring Haas painted a grim picture of how much influence the Mazepins had over the team. There was even a revelation that Dmitry threatened to pull funding unless they gave Nikita a new car, because he claimed the car he was driving was undrivable. And this episode was the most polarizing for Haas and Gunther, since they received a lot of hate on social media because of it. Netflix seemed to go out of their way to show Mazepin's in the more neutral light, such as presenting Nikita's supposed and very dubious knowledge of Russian rain clouds as a stroke of genius that made him switch tires to Inters first in Sochi. And this amazing strategy achieved the distinction of making him outperform his teammate and Nicholas Latifi. Not exactly the great talents of Formula One. Although Gunther is shown as being exasperated by Nikita's antics with an audio where he sternly explains to him that the way he talks to members of the team is why everyone hates him, he also adds that Nikita is a great talent and tries to be as diplomatic as possible to justify retaining him and Mick for the next season. None of this seems natural and stifles Gunther's outrageous personality.
Let's chat about McLaren versus Ferrari. Each of these teams has a new driver, and each team was gunning towards third in the constructors. McLaren was looking to retain their position, and Ferrari, who was sixth in the previous season, needed to rise towards the top of the grid. It was surprising to see how tense the relationship between Ricciardo and Norris seemed to be in 2021. Before Ricciardo moved to McLaren, fans had predicted that the two would get along really well. Instead, the season showed a rather fractious and at times very petty relationship between the pair. The expectation that Ricciardo was going to bring a lot of podiums to McLaren and have a solid partnership with Lando Norris did not quite deliver right out of the gate. Daniel really struggled with learning the car, which resulted in Norris outperforming him consistently. However, we do see it come together with a McLaren 1-2 in Monza following the summer break. Ferrari ended up third in the constructors and McLaren fourth after battling it out throughout the season. Where we did get to see a strong driver pairing was at Ferrari, with Carlos Sainz joining Charles Leclerc. These two got along quite well, so one would question, is Carlos Sainz the dream teammate? We see Carlos's first podium with Ferrari pretty early in the season at the crown jewel of F1, the Monaco Grand Prix.
Carlos Sainz is definitely not a dream teammate. One of the most telling moments is when Charles Leclerc is showing Carlos Sainz the streets of Monaco, where he grew up and went to school. And a fan approaches him and says that he wants him, Charles, to win. Carlos very sarcastically replies, "Thanks for the support." And Charles has to remind him that Carlos gets the same adulation in Spain as Charles is getting in his hometown. And if we have to talk about Monaco, Charles Leclerc did get pole in 2021. It was the most triumphant moment that was incredibly fleeting, as almost always happens. Things did not go well for the Monégasque. So qualifying in Monaco, as presented, I think, in every season of Drive to Survive, is really the key to the race, since the track is notoriously very narrow and overtaking is very hard. So whoever gets pole is presumptive to win the race. So it was very monumental that Charles Leclerc got the pole position. Unfortunately, things in qualifying didn't end that great because when Max Verstappen tried to set a faster time, Leclerc went out again and hit a wall. At the time, the damage didn't seem so dramatic or catastrophic. On the formation lap, Leclerc suffered a gearbox issue and had to retire the car before the start of the race, of course, giving Max the pole position and eventually winning the race, even though for Max, Monaco is not his best race. This is also the race that we got Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris podium positions. And I just want to mention about dream teammates and Carlos Sainz. He had a dream teammate because Charles Leclerc is shown coming down and hugging him to congratulate him for the first podium with Ferrari.
Williams and George Russell. We haven't talked about Williams because there honestly hasn't been much to talk about. However, after 40 years, Williams is sold to a venture capital firm. Claire Williams steps down. Sir Frank Williams passes away and a new era begins, Jost Capito at the helm. The driver pairing at Williams with George Russell and Nick Latifi shows Russell consistently outperforming Latifi. Russell was willing to sacrifice himself during the Hungarian Grand Prix to ensure points for Williams. Russell's very emotional response to his long-awaited points at Williams was one of just a couple of heartfelt storylines we saw this season. However, Russell and Bottas's contracts were up at the end of 2021. There was a lot of speculation over the second Mercedes seat, but in the end, Toto decided to pair George Russell with Lewis Hamilton in 2022.
And if we have to talk about Russell, we have to talk about Valtteri Bottas, who was in the Mercedes seat in 2021. Although he's always calm, collected, and very rational with his true feelings, you can tell how much it hurt Bottas when during the British Grand Prix, he is told to sacrifice his chances of winning the race and let Lewis Hamilton through. He tries to reassert his inner bastard, but he also realizes this is a team sport, and if he wants a chance to continue to be part of the team, he has to accept team orders. Unfortunately, this gesture is not enough, and George Russell gets the Mercedes seat. But I like that Drive to Survive and Mercedes are very transparent, showing how brutal team principles need to be, especially when they show a phone conversation between James Vowles and Toto Wolff about being ruthless with team orders. James actually says, it is very harsh and it is very straightforward and he'll be frustrated and upset. I know that. And then they proceed to do the team orders. At Imola, Bottas and Russell actually crashed with Russell being uncharacteristically aggressive and blaming the incident entirely on Bottas. This incident actually gave Toto Wolff pause about getting George into Mercedes because, as he said, the things that are inexcusable in a driver are arrogance, sense of entitlement, and an approach that it was not my fault. Aaron, I'm sure there are a number of drivers still on the grid who fit that description.
I can think of quite a few right off the top of my head, actually. So as we saw towards the end of 2020, Red Bull was getting ready for the fight to dethrone Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton. In 2021, we saw that Hamilton could no longer count on running away with the title. He was going to have to fight and fight hard against Red Bull's Max Verstappen. The battle was nothing short of all-encompassing. Toto Wolff and Christian Horner were prepared to defend their drivers to the end. The gloves came off, and what started out as Olympic boxing moved to pro boxing and then all-out MMA. As we've said, the 2021 season was one of a kind. The sport had never seen such a dramatic end to the final. Even though F1 has had its title deciders in the last race, but never before the two title contenders have ended up with the exact same amount of points going into the final race. Lewis and Max took 17 and 18 podiums respectively out of the 22 races they took part in. In order to reach these podiums, the two racing giants had a couple of intense battles with each other, which often didn't end well.
No, it didn't. As Buxton makes a point that Lewis is known as a clean driver and Max has a do or die attitude. To quote another Finnish saying, the hungriest wolf runs the furthest. In Silverstone, Lewis went for the space that Max left and they collided, with Max suffering physical injury in addition to the car damage. Lewis was shaken up and asking if Max was okay, with Max grunting obviously in pain. I have never seen a driver experience that much pain that is obvious to a fan listening to the radio. Christian Horner was livid, as usual, and blamed Lewis for causing the accident and was extremely disgusted by Lewis winning. He actually said, "Our biggest rival created accident, and there he is jumping up and down." It was an ugly incident, with Christian accusing Lewis of being a bully and Lewis accusing Max of being a bully. Not to be outdone, in Monza, they both tried to make turn one together. Max ran out of space. He then got his car mounted on top of Hamilton, and his right wheel hit Lewis's head. His helmet ended up with tire marks on it. Fortunately, Hamilton escaped unscathed thanks to the halo. Max came out of the car angrily stating, "That's what you get when you don't have space." He showed extreme immaturity and unsportsmanlike conduct by walking past Hamilton, never apologizing, and not making sure it was okay. The steward investigated the incident and found that Max was responsible, and he got grid penalty as a result for the next race.
Clearly, it was an intense battle between the teams and the drivers throughout the entire season, and at points taken to the extreme where it borderlined on being unsafe. The final Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi began with Verstappen taking the final pole position of the season. His advantage wouldn't even last a corner in the race as Hamilton produced a lightning start to get past his rival into the opening corner and dominate the early stages of the race. Then came the first pit stop. Both drivers dove into the pits, only for Lewis to come out behind Sergio Perez. The team instructions were very clear. Hold up Hamilton as much as possible. Perez did just that. He placed his car in the most awkward positions to frustrate Lewis and cut his lead down from 11 seconds to just under one. In the process, Perez was also bestowed with a new title by fans on social media as Mexico's Minister of Defense. Hamilton pulled away, though, and picked up a 13-second lead before Nick Latifi in the Williams crashed at corner 14, which brought out a very late safety car on lap 53. Verstappen pitted, put on new soft tires. Hamilton stayed out on the hards, assuming that it would be enough to cross the line in the lead to seal his eighth world title. Instead, race director Michael Massey allowed only five lapped cars between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen to unlap themselves, leaving others out of position. He then restarted the race on the final lap, failing to adhere to the rule that requires a restart only at the end of the following lap after lapped cars have overtaken.
I just want to interject that Drive to Survive shows that even the other drivers on the grid were confused. Lance Stroll, of all people, sounded very perplexed, and Carlos Sainz gave a very good verdict. Very strange.
It was very strange. This decision gave Verstappen, on fresher tires, a significant advantage, allowing him to pass Hamilton and win the race and the championship, despite Hamilton's dominant performance.
William Buxton succinctly summarized the decision as Max is the only beneficiary.
Understandably, Hamilton, the entire Mercedes team, and fans were livid at the outcome of the 2021 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which essentially gifted Max Verstappen the championship. Mercedes immediately protested the result. Following the FIA's own investigation of the final race of 2021, Massey was fired. The report detailed that Massey had failed to properly implement the safety car rulings, but even still, the result stood and Verstappen kept his title. Watching this unfold live in 2021, I cannot express how angry and shocked I was. I did not have a very clear understanding of the rules at the time. I had no idea about safety cars and unlapping cars and the rules or anything. But it was very clear to me that Michael Massey scripted an ending for a TV drama instead of implementing the rules properly, which would have resulted in Hamilton being an eight-time world champion. As a brand new fan, I vividly remember calling into question the authenticity and validity of the sport. I was so surprised that someone in Massey's position could make such a call. Aside from being appalled at the decision, I hated to see my driver lose. Both were championship material that season, but Hamilton was more of a class act, in my humble opinion. Ina, what do you think? Did the FIA prioritize entertainment over fairness?
The way that Drive to Survive shows it, Michael Massey as race director was trying to appease a lot of interest. And you know what they say, when you try to appease everyone, you please no one. Throughout the season and the last episode, Drive to Survive showed Christian Horner constantly complaining to Massey and the media that Red Bull were treated unfairly and all of FIA's decisions were favorable towards Mercedes and unfavorable towards Red Bull. In the race itself, when Max briefly takes the lead from Lewis, who retook it after cutting the corner, Christian Horner questioned Massey why Lewis was allowed to keep the lead and accused Massey of not following the regulations correctly, which is extremely ironic, with Massey clearly getting flustered and saying that Lewis gave up any advantage he had at the end of that lap, even though Christian Horner kept challenging him that there is no visible evidence on video that shows that. After the Latifi incident, the initial decision was that no overlapped cars can unlap themselves. Christian Horner again questioned Massey why this was being done. And Massey, who seemed buried under pressure, kept saying that his main concern was to clear Latifi's car off the track. Thus, Drive to Survive wants us to follow the crumbs that Massey succumbed to the pressure and Horner's narrative that everything was going Mercedes' way and perhaps, in his mind, tried to level the playing field. It was a gross miscalculation that someone at his level should have known that the course of action would put everything in Max's favor. And thus his firing was very justified, although it's not mentioned in Drive to Survive. Stefano Domenicali said at the beginning of this episode, no matter what happens, F1 wins. And even though, Aaron, I totally understand your frustration as a new fan, I think you may have been right because we still have Lewis Hamilton in the sport and he's still doing things to cement his legacy. So I'm glad that he stayed long enough for me to enjoy watching him race live.
True. He is still on the grid and it is extra special that our drivers are teammates this year. In the third round of Who Said That Quote, Ina will try to stump me as she currently leads 4-3. I am ready, Ina. Let's see what you have in store for this round.
Okay, here we go. This is a quote from a team principal or CEO. If you understand why you fell short of your own expectations, you can move on and try to improve the next race. Was it Christian Horner, Jos Capito, Toto Wolff, or Zak Brown?
I'm going to go with Toto.
You are correct. It is Toto. Okay, so now we're tied. The next one is said by a driver. If races go bad, it won't be because of me. Was it said by Nikita Mazepin, Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, or Valtteri Bottas?
Oh, that's tricky. Races go bad. It's not because of me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a Max Verstappen quote. You didn't put him in there.
Too bad, but no. Nope,
okay, who are my driver choices again?
Nikita Mazepin, Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, or Valtteri Bottas?
I'm going to go with Nikita Mazepin.
I knew you would, but it was actually Valtteri Bottas.
Dang it.
It was like a very uncharacteristic one, right?
That is, yeah. All right.
5-4. Okay. All right. I think you're going to get this one.
Okay.
It's, again, spoken by a team principal. There is no such thing as a good loser. Is it Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, Jos Capito, or Gunther Steiner?
I wish I paid more attention in these episodes. Steiner?
No, Christian Horner. And that is the most mild one we could find from him.
That doesn't even sound like a Horner thing to say.
It was, because Toto was accusing him of not winning in the right way. So he was saying there's no such thing as a good loser. So he's going to rage against the machine.
All right. Well, that's fair in that context.
All right. Okay. So now we're...
You're 6-4.
6-4? Okay. Okay. Do you want two more to try to even this up?
Yeah, let's try it out. Or I'll just go into a bigger deficit.
Okay. The next one is said by a driver.
Okay.
If you don't do the right things on the track, you will not be faster. Was it Lewis Hamilton, Daniel Ricciardo, Lando Norris, or Mick Schumacher?
Hamilton.
No, it was Mick Schumacher.
Mick had like 5 lines.
I know, but that one I thought was pretty profound. All right.
All right. Let's see if I can just dig my hole deeper.
I think you're gonna get this one.
You've said that twice. This is just not my morning.
Maybe not, but I think this one is, I think, a little bit more,
Okay.
obvious. It's said by a
Okay.
driver. I'm like a tiger, silently preparing.
Oh, Yuki.
Okay, well, see, you don't even need to guess.
No,
Okay.
I knew that one.
All right, I have a two-parter. So I can ask you a question, and if you guess who said it and who it is said about,
Okay.
you will get 2 points.
All right.
Do you want to try it?
Sure. Where
Okay.
am I at?
I say 7-5.
I've lost
Yes.
score.
It is.
It's just
Well,
in your favor.
my point
May the
is
odds forever be in your favor.
if you answer this two-part question,
Okay.
we'll be tied. And I think
Okay.
that would be a good result.
Okay,
Okay.
let's see.
Is said by a driver about a driver. Blank is a funny guy. So I'm going to tell you who said it
Okay.
and about whom, and you choose the pairing. And
Okay.
if you get both correct. So who said it? You're Pierre Gasly or Nikita Mazepin?
Well, it's not Mazepan because he's not a funny guy. We can eliminate
It
him
could
right
be
now.
said sarcastically. You don't know.
So I'm going to say Charles said it about Carlos.
Ding, ding, ding. We're even.
All right. 7-7. I had a little redemption.
I tried.
Those are, you got me on a couple of those. Most of those were hard out of context.
They are.
They really are tough. Okay. Let's jump into wild card topics or episode superlatives.
I have a couple of superlatives. One is the brattiest comment, which is Lando Norris regarding Carlos Sainz moving to Ferrari, which he termed was for pure cash reasons. There's also the most unexpected, angriest radio, and that was George Russell during British Grand Prix. I never saw him swear that much and never expected him to bang on Bottas's helmet after they both crashed out and he got out of the car. I mean, pure Bottas even said, I thought he was coming over to see how I was.
That was very uncharacteristic of Russell. And I can see why it gave Toto pause because it was Russell's fault. That wasn't
Completely.
Bottas. It was his. And he
And
never
here,
apologized and was very entitled about it.
the funniest moment for me was Sebastian Vettel actually talking to someone off camera about being confused with Daniel Ricciardo. So this fan was saying, oh, you are that guy. I know you. You're Daniel Ricciardo. And Vettel responded, how did you know? And he said it in a very funny way. And finally, the most relatable moment for me was Yuki complaining about hating working out and saying that working out in the morning ruins his day. I can totally relate to that feeling.
I'm going to say best team sport, and it really does go to Valtteri Bottas. We have talked so much about him being number two and his inner bastard coming out, and you could see the real conflict playing out. And then he realized, and you said it, like, if I'm going to stay on this team, and then he even said, even in Formula One, like, if I don't go to Mercedes, I want to be picked up by somebody else. If you are not considered a team player, no one is going to touch you. And so for him, once he realized he's out of the title fight, and he said it, like, if I'm not going to win, I want the team to win and I want Lewis to win and to be able to secure five constructors' titles together is really special. So I give him a lot of kudos for that one because suppressing your ego and getting to that point takes age, maturity, and experience, which he showed. And then for class act, I think Lewis Hamilton can give a master class on how to be a class act on the grid. He has shown it time and time again how hard it is to dig deep, but to maintain composure in times of defeat, especially losing to Max in Abu Dhabi, and still having the gusto to go congratulate him and to be very humble because they both had extremely successful seasons. That was just such a shocking thing to process what just happened. And then for him to get out and still have that poise and composure, and even how he handled Monza. That's actually what cemented him as my favorite driver for me, is his ability to really show how strong he is in the ups and the downs in the sport. I'm
That's
very curious to see what your lost to time moments are for this episode, since you had watched Drive to Survive before to then watching it. I should probably think of some since I watched it live and then actually got to see how Netflix did it.
absolutely. So these are the moments that I forgot from my first watch, but they now resonate a lot more. So first, it would be Toto saying that George Russell outperformed the car after George qualified P2 in Spa. There's no such thing as outperforming the car. And it's very interesting because Formula One fans really get angry whenever they hear that. They actually think that's usually not real fans who express this sentiment. Because how can you outperform the car? You can only do as much as the car allows you to do. You can push it to the limit. And that is the whole art of being a Formula One driver, push it to the limit, but not go over the limit. And obviously George in the rain in Spa accomplished that. But even he said, like, he took all the right risks. They all paid off. And there was some luck involved as well. So the fact that Toto Wolff expressed this sentiment, I think stood out this time. Because I realized that it's not just casual fans who may feel that way, even very embedded insiders can express something like that as well.
It was interesting for me because when I watched 2021 Live, I really wasn't paying attention to Russell Bottas. I was so fixated on the Lewis trajectory of what was going on, but re-watching that lap and really having a better understanding now of where Williams was and how difficult and what a feat that was. For me, that was a huge redemption moment and really like kudos to George Russell. And what you see a couple times in Drive to Survive is when the drivers comment on being one with the car, and Russell truly was one with the car to be able to achieve that lap.
Another thing from Toto was that he thanked God that his objection to Halo from 4 years before 2021 were not heeded. Since the crash between Max and Lewis at Monza, that Halo really saved his life. And so for Toto to see the evidence of why Halo was needed and appreciate that he was wrong, I thought was a very strong statement. Another little things were kind of glimpses of future was Liam Lawson helping Yuki to pack his car when he moved to Italy.
For me, that was a complete loss to time because I totally forgot that they were roommates. And this is the first time Red Bull chose to invest in a driver and condition Yuki then to release him. Because there are so many of the up-and-coming drivers and rookies that they have chosen to swap seats out before. And this was the first time they didn't do that.
I also think the Honda relationship kind of helped because Honda was the engine supplier for Red Bull and Yuki is very famously a Honda driver. I'm not surprised that it was Yuki that they decided to change the trajectory of how they usually treat their junior drivers.
That's fair. And I am sure that that relationship played a big part in it, as we see engine suppliers, sponsors, the roles that those play within the team.
I saved the best for last. There were Roscoe sightings at both British and French Grand Prix. There were like a second of time devoted to those sightings, but it made me really pleased to see them.
Who isn't happy to see Roscoe on the grid? Seriously, how do you not smile when you see that little bulldog coming your way?
The championship fight in 2021 between Lewis and Max got so tense that it was, if you didn't know how it ended, it was a very tense edge of your seat action. And even if you knew how it ended, you were so focused on watching everyone's reacting to it. Unfortunately, this was a little bit undercut by the fact that Max did not participate in season 4. So you actually focus more on Christian Horner as the voice of Red Bull. And then, of course, you also hear from Toto and Lewis for their perspective. But I think it a little bit undercuts what Max was going through, because it makes it very easy for Netflix to paint Max unfavorably, especially compared to Lewis. But I think there are two moments where Drive to Survive shows glimmers of Max's grace. When he congratulates Daniel Ricciardo for winning Monza with a smile and compliments Daniel on overtaking Max at the start. And also, I think what was most unexpected for me is seeing how he broke down after winning at Abu Dhabi. I don't think I've ever seen Max that emotional. And when you see how much it cost him to win and realize that he was only a couple of months after turning 24, his win stings just a little bit less.
Gonna slightly disagree with you there. The stinging part. However, I do agree with you that Max showing emotion, he is usually extremely composed and closed off. It was nice to see him congratulate Ricardo. That was very genuine. regarding showing emotion at the win, I agree there is probably a skew from Netflix just because Max did not participate. That was an extremely intense, hard-fought year. I think on either side, it's hard when one person has to lose when you're in a situation like that. If I were Max, though, and I am sure in his mind, certain things are justified throughout the whole season, the fact that 2021 is still talked about the way that it is and how contentious that ending was, and that it was scripted by Michael Massey, and the fact that that is the only time that rule was not implemented and what became of it, I would not want that hanging over my head for my first World Drivers' Championship. Max has since gone on to be a multiple time world champion, undisputed, completely undisputed, well earned. However, that whole year was intense, but that Abu Dhabi race was Lewis's. And I would not want that over my head if I were Max. Or maybe if I was a world champion, I really wouldn't care how I got it one way or another, but I don't know.
I think everyone else on the grid would take it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that goes down to character, but maybe that's just my view on Max versus Lewis. But either way, we do know that Drive to Survive can't cover every driver or team story, but season four featured noticeably fewer storylines and drivers. There was no time spent on Aston Martin or their star driver, Sebastian Vettel, and they didn't even show how he clinched the team's first podium in Baku. Kimi Räikkönen's last season in F1 was in 2021 with Alfa Romeo. That didn't even get a mention, although Kimi's hatred of the press could have had a bit of something to do with that.
With regards to that, I feel it's too bad because there was a press conference where somebody asked Sebastian Vettel what he would miss most about Kimi, and he like perfectly deadpanned the silence.
Fitting, very fitting. Netflix also admitted Fernando Alonso's return to the sport with Alpine. I know it could have been the result of a hectic production schedule, but other than Bottas and Russell, they did not give any airtime for the upcoming 2022 season. They failed to mention how F1 was about to get its first Chinese driver with Zhou Guanyu, or the fact that Alex Albon returned to the grid with Williams.
Well, that's why the fans said we needed 20 episodes because there was so much to cover in 2021.
This is true. So, current silly season rumors. Cursing has been a hot topic, and driver fines and the redo on what that structure is going to look like. So we'll put something out to show a visual on that because it's hard to explain over the airways. Yet FIA is also considering banning all team radios to crack down on swearing, which I disagree with.
I think that's very misguided. Now, I'm assuming it's not that they're banning radios between the team and the driver. They're banning airing of radios, which is very misguided because, first of all, on the broadcast, they censor them anyway. There's always a delay. The swear words are always cut out. The only time it can possibly come through is when they play the winning radio. This is the kind of thing, because I've seen a lot of social media talk about, oh, the drivers have to protest, the drivers have to take a stand. And I'm like, the drivers really don't care. I don't think they like their radios being played for everyone. I think the teams might have an issue because they also love to listen in to other teams' radios. And that's why there are some hilarious code words that are invented. I mean, Ferrari, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and
Plan E?
papaya.
Like,
Oh,
what is
yeah.
Plan E? How do you get that far down the alphabet?
I don't know. I think there was a radio. I don't remember if it was Leclerc or Sainz when he was like, I don't know what that is.
It was
It's
Sainz, I think, last year. I mean, it's dumbfounding the options, but in any other professional sport, you would never put mics on like an NFL player. You just wouldn't do it. The swearing doesn't bother me.
So I really don't want this to happen because my enjoyment as a fan of Formula One racing will be affected for sure. And also Drive to Survive will now have to work doubly hard to get behind the scenes because they rely on the radios a lot to kind of convey driver state of mind and what's going on within the team.
Yeah, they use that to blend the stories. I would say I think the FIA needs to worry less about swearing and more about having a regimented program for stewards and making sure race directors are very clear about reinforcing the rules. I think that should be more of what they're worried about than cuss words and radios.
this year we will have a new race director, at least one, because it's been a revolving door of race directors being interchangeably put in for various races.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or shout out your favorite F1 Nepo baby. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.